You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
Win the game, play the song. Them's the rules. Bison Report Radio, brought to you by Gateway Chevrolet. I am your host, Ross Uglum, and joining me is number three in your programs, number one in your hearts, the OG, Trevor Gebhardt. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well, Ross. We know what everyone's focused on this week. Let's get this bad boy rolling.
Yeah. Just real quick, I suppose, dip into the news. Will Mostert was the special teams player of the week. I thought that was odd with one blocked field goal, though it did come at a big moment. He got a QB pressure and a sack, though. So, I mean, a big overall day for Will. I thought it was an interesting way to recognize his day, to name him special teams player of the week for the conference. But shout out to Will. Kobe Johnson likely back this Saturday. Coach Entz making that announcement at the press conference today. And more of a wait-and-see situation on Sundell. Jalen Sundell, the center, in a walking boot on the sideline in Terre Haute. And interesting to me a little bit that they're pretty darn defined roles as far as backups are concerned. Because Gray Zabel came in really as a center, as a taller center, but came in as a center, but was put in for Nash Jensen when Nash was unavailable, played guard. I think Gray is the ogre. Gray is the backup guard. And it's really cool, or it's really clear that Westberg is the backup center. They're not going to put Gray in at center over Westberg. He is the center and a damn fine backup center. In fact, I about to tell you, he'd start at maybe every other MVFC school that isn't Youngstown or NDSU. Westy's good. I really, really enjoy his game. They pulled him a couple times against Indiana State, and it was super effective. Just a very, very impressive week for young Mr. Westerman, as Zach Willis calls him. Trev, I'm going to play you a couple of comments here from Coach Entz and his time today in the shack at the press conference. We'll kind of go through those because I was in a brief internet argument with a fan over Cam Miller's performance, and I wanted to get Coach Entz's take on the situation, not because I was in an argument with the fan, but just because, like, to my eye, I thought he was excellent. PFF College comes back, they give him an elite grade, highest, especially for the day that Tamarick had, highest graded Bison offensive player of the game. Again, those things aren't the gospel, but it is a unbiased opinion. The people grading the game don't care about NDSU football at all. Like, they don't. So it's some nerd in Cincinnati just watching the game. So I always, I'm interested in what someone with no preconceived notions, no biases, no, they don't care if Cam Miller plays well. So that's why it's interesting to me. But head coach right here on Cam.
As you have seen Cam Miller operate at. Are you talking about Saturday? Or just recent? Saturday, I thought he was unbelievably efficient. And if you go back and watch the film, and I'm sure, I know, Ross, you have, there's probably three or four drops in there where all of a sudden this young man, he was targeting it really well. Now, Cam's very detail-oriented and very specific. I'm sure he'd sit here and tell you the ball was behind the receiver. but there was two or three balls that could have been dropped. I mean, you could be talking about 24 for 27, 25 for 27. That's 2 weeks in a row now that our quarterback's been 70%, 2 weeks in a row that we've thrown to eight different people. And so he's utilizing his tools. He's spreading the ball out all over the field. I'm excited about where we're at. There's screen game. There's overs. There's verticals. There's check down passes. He's making good decisions right now.
I agree with Coach. My assessment was right there. And Pro Football Focus actually gave Cam 4 drops. So they gave him an adjusted completion percentage because he completed 77.8% of his passes. They gave him the 25 of 27 that Ants did. They gave him 4 drops, or, you know, gave his receivers 4 drops, 25 of 27. And we go back to the actual numbers, not the adjusted numbers, the actual numbers, 7.8 yards per attempt. And we had an average depth of target of 7 yards downfield. These are not screens and check down. There are screens, especially some of the interesting stuff they tried to run to Hunter, but he's, I don't know, man. And by the way, how about 10 first downs with his arm? 10 first down conversions with his arm. I just, man, I'm impressed with this kid, and we'll talk a little bit more about it later, but I like what Coach said about it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you can really say it any better. I think there are 6 different pass catchers with multiple completions. You don't really see that often in a Bison offense. Not much more needs to be said or discussed. I don't, whatever fan you got into an internet argument with, I find that very interesting. It's just a lazy take. There was 8 had receptions. I'm talking multiple. So a double.
Oh, right? 7.
Yeah. I might have misspoke too.
Yep. Tamerica was the only one with a single catch. Stoffel, Raja, Hunter, DJ, Lippy, Henderson, and obviously Mathis had multiple receptions.
Yeah. So
Mathis is a dog.
When you have that in a NDSU game where the offense is not predicated on pushing the ball downfield, but that's his yards per attempt and 10 first downs throwing the ball, I thought he was slinging it pretty well. I mean, I thought his decision-making was solid. Him and Zach were on the same page, which was a phenomenal step to see. You know, you wish you had those 4 back. I'm sure Cam will put that on himself, just like Coach Ent said. That's just a sign of a leader and a solid quarterback. So, you know, this pass game has made leaps and bounds, strides from where it was even 2 weeks ago. So I was very encouraged by that. And it's, you know, obviously the head ball coach is reiterating the same thing that we have that agreeing opinion on.
And here's, because this will kind of color the rest of the conversation. I want to give you Matt's take on the opinion of him, or the viewpoint that he is frustrated, with a 5-1 number one ranked team in the country in the way that they're playing football. Because I think it kind of partially mirrors what you've been saying on the show and in the chat.
A better football team,
right?
5-1. You have to like that. We're finding ways to win. Now, where I get frustrated, and again, I don't mean to come across as frustrated. I just think there's more, and maybe that's me being a stick in the mud. I am 50 now, so I guess I am considered old. But maybe I think they're better than what I've seen on Saturday. So if me having elevated frustration comes across as being frustrated, then I'm fine with that. They know my expectations. I talk to every single one. I love every single one of our kids. You can tell by the crack in my voice.
Powerful stuff, man. And I think that's, you know, there are two, I guess, two schools of thought, two different ways of looking at it. The pessimist view would be you are what your tape says you are. You are what your record says you are. And like Coach Ent said, he doesn't like the word potential. But at the same time, if he really believes that they're better than what they're putting on tape right now, that's exciting because they're still winning the games. They're still coming on the left-hand side of the column and not the right. All their goals are still in front of them. That loss to Arizona notwithstanding, it's still out there. So just interesting his thoughts on the matter, because I think it'll kind of color our discussion moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on this, and I could spend probably an hour by myself yelling into a microphone, but this team has not lived up to an expectation of what's become the norm in that locker room for the better part of a decade. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. They're capable of it. I know they are. We've had this discussion for a couple of different years with NDSU, and that expectation has to be there, because that's how you meet the success level that is wanted in Fargo, and even more so in the locker room, in the coach's office. You have to have that. If you don't have that burning desire to meet that, it's going to be very, very hard to obtain it. And it's not all doom and gloom. You take a look at the things that you need to improve on and try to correct it the next week. I had a lot of doubts, even in our BRR chat, about this passing game and where the receivers were going to go. And they have proven me wrong when I have challenged them openly on here for that. And it's phenomenal. And it's going to be the same thing now moving forward with tackling like we have done, and just simply hanging on to the football. Those have to be met. Those have to be met in order for you to reach your goals. And I think that's why it's a frustrating thing, because they're not doing it consistently. Can they do it? Absolutely. Have they shown the capability of being great? Absolutely. They have not done it consistently yet. And I think that's where the frustration stems, is you want so badly for these kids to perform to the level that they know they can reach, and they just haven't done it yet consistently. And when you're getting to matchups like, I know this, we're going to recap Indiana State here, but when you have matchups like South Dakota State this coming week, and you don't do it consistently for four quarters, you're going to lose the game. Therefore, you're not going to reach your goals and reach what the group is capable of. So it becomes one of those things where you challenge the guys and say, how do you want to be known? What do you want to be remembered for? It's not effort at this point, and that's great. But what are you going to do when the opportunities come for you to go reach those goals and you have a chance to take care of non-talent parts of the game that can help you win? What are you going to do? And I think that's where the frustration comes in, not only from Coach Hintz and probably the locker room and the fan base. So we're not giving you anything groundbreaking. Everyone's seen it. But Coach Hintz has very much got his head on straight with where they're at and where he knows they can go. And the expectation, anything short of that, I think would be unfortunate. So I'm glad he has that mindset.
Across midfield, a foot race, 30, 20, 10, trot in there, baby!
The Bison Report Radio podcast is brought to you by Gateway Chevrolet. Truck headquarters is Gateway Chevrolet, with new Silverados arriving daily right now. You can buy a new Chevy Silverado at invoice. Yes, invoice pricing on new Silverados. They've got a fresh look with larger screens and easy-to-use technology. Save thousands on your new Chevy Silverado with four different motors available: dynamic fuel management, Bluetooth, backup camera, Apple CarPlay, and more. Details are at gatewayfargo.com, or stop by on the I-29 Frontage Road in Fargo. Coming prepared to play football. That, Trev, is your biggest issue, or was mm-hmm. your biggest issue. Sure. And that's, you know, we talked about BYOE all week last week. We talked, and I don't think I'm going to buy that they were looking ahead to the Rabbits. I don't think I'm going to buy that one.
Right. Yeah, I don't either.
I kind of did buy, or would buy, the BYOE. Like, I did not see the juice, man. And look, those first, you know, few three and outs were great defensively, but I don't know. I didn't see a lot of fire. I didn't. And I know there's a business-like mentality on the road, but like, I didn't see the juice.
Yeah, I just don't know how mentally ready this group was to take care of business. It just seemed like they were there for the, you know, a nice spring day, lull them to sleep. I know I've used spring day for the preview and this. It's not the spring, it's the fall, but that's the feeling and vibe I get when I was in Terre Haute. So that's why I say that. It's just kind of a picnicky day. And I hate using the word failure because they didn't fail. But for lack of a better term, they failed to realize almost that Indiana State's season will be made by knocking you off. Put it to bed early, put the doubt in their mind early, and then you can relax the rest of the game. And I hate saying that too. And now I know I'm getting a text about that. But you go back and look at the box score. They got outscored in the second quarter, which is indicative of the last four games. Since Arizona, they've been outscored 40-34 in the second quarter.
Okay.
40-34 in the second quarter. They're outscoring the last four opponents 21-10 in the first quarter. So you can take it with a grain of salt, but still, when your first quarters sometimes have weird, sometimes they go fast. You know, first quarter is hard to really use.
Throwing jabs.
Being outscored. And this game was a microcosm of that. So when you're not ready to play, you can get away with it against bad teams, especially when you turn the ball over. You lose a turnover margin by three. That tells me you're not ready to play mentally. And when that happens, you can get away with it against teams that aren't high quality, but moving forward in the Valley, you cannot do that, especially on the road. So totally agree. A BYOE was not there.
Early three and outs. Defensively, I thought they actually did have the juice early. And ultimately, you know, you talk about making mistakes and making them fast. They got caught in a little bit of a twist. Spencer was crashing on that 81-yarder. K's didn't quite get over there fast enough, but I thought the energy was good. And one thing too, you know, I said on the radio before the game, I thought this would be the week that they got it together a little bit. I didn't see a ton of, you know, make you miss guys or run through you guys. I said, hey, single digit missed tackles this week. They have five total missed tackles this week. That's a huge deal. But, the run fits weren't there. Defensively, what did you think of the energy early and their ability to kind of come downhill and attack a little bit?
Yeah, it seemed like they were just getting their hats on the ball a little bit quicker. I thought they were flying around more than they have been early on in games, trying to create havoc. I don't recall what Indiana State had for turnovers in the first half.
None. They never
– not at all.
They never – no. They didn't turn it over, nor were they called. It was insane. They didn't turn it over, nor did they get called for penalty.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, we talked about that. I had
that's pretty cool.
Well, I had tweeted at Peralt, like, how many times do you lose the turnover battle 3-rip? The other team doesn't turn it over and doesn't commit a penalty and you win on the road. That is not the recipe for winning on the road, losing the turnover battle 3-rip and not having the other team called for a single penalty.
Okay. Wow. That's impressive. Didn't mean to get too sidetracked there, but
it was crazy.
Yeah, that's valid. That's very valid. I mean, that does make it a little more impressive. I do think that's indicative of the quality of the opponent. I'm not trying to knock Indiana State. I thought they played well. I thought they were prepared. I thought Hendricks got his But defensively, I thought it was a step in the right direction. You talked about single-digit tackles needing to be met. They met that. Again, it's a step in the right direction. Some fits missed. It's going to happen. There's going to be some growing pains with certain guys. But those are the things, again, when you see it on tape and you learn from them, you cannot make that same mistake twice moving forward in the Valley. It's only going to get more competitive. Quality of opponents is going to get even greater. And teams this season will be made by beating you if they're not playoff eligible. So you're still going to get the best shot from everyone every week. Defensively, you can't afford to take a step backwards, especially with this group.
Ball security is an issue I wanted to ask you about. Coach had kind of indicated we won't play that one for you. I got one of coaches about the effect that the crowd can have on the game. I'm going to put that one in the preview because I'd like, I mean, obviously, like, I'd like to challenge Bison Nation right now. Sell that thing. I want standing room. This is number one versus number two. Never happened before. Number one versus number two for The Rock. I want it. I want a Georgia Southern loud up in there. Like, it needs to be, as my good friend, I've never met him, as my guy, Hall of Fame wrestling announcer Jim Ross would say, I want an ass every 18 inches, baby. That's how wide stadiums is. I want an ass every 18 inches, and I want them in the corners. But that's another time for another day. So Coach had mentioned ball security as most of the fumbles they've, besides probably the one in South Dakota where Bussy just came off of a move and was kind of, I don't know if suspended in the air is right, but like he had just juked or spun or something, and it was a, frankly, just a 5'5" man meeting a much larger man in an unfortunate situation. But other than that, a lot of guys like getting caught from behind or, you know, making a move to make a guy miss and then someone running full speed behind them catches up, or reaching for extra yardage as opposed to keeping 3 points of pressure on the football. Do you see a real ball security issue, or is it more of just like it's an effort thing and maybe the guys need to be a little bit more, instead of trying to always make that extra play, be a little bit more conservative with the football? Not necessarily, you know, two hands on the ball and sliding before someone hits you, like maybe you've seen receivers do after picking up the first down, but just making what is the ball, Trevor?
The ball is the program. The ball is the program.
Yeah. So anyway, your thoughts?
Yeah. No. I thought that was well said. I don't think it's effort. I really don't. Usually that is the case with ball security. I think it's situational awareness with this group. I think it's just being smart football players and understanding the type of situation you might be in and taking care of the football accordingly. Sometimes the ball does warrant two hands on it. Sometimes the ball warrants being in a certain hand. I don't think that's been an issue with the ball being in a certain hand, but this group has a tendency to not consider who's around them, what's around them, the type of situation that's at play. And the best example I can give you is Dom Gannella's fumble into the end zone. Brother, you're near the goal line. That's about their only shot to stop you from scoring right now. And they are going to do everything they can to get the ball from you. Like,
these guys don't match up well at the 6 yard line.
Huh?
These guys don't match up well at the 6 yard line. Just go down at the 6 yard line.
Yeah. Like the ball, like that is the most, the ball is the program play I've seen. And here's another example for our fans that follow K-State as well. Malik Knowles at the goal line, situational awareness. I think that's the receiver for Kansas State. They got hit from behind in the Iowa State Kansas State game. Do you know what I'm referencing?
I was doing a thing. Yeah, I didn't have a chance to watch that one. I was doing a thing.
All good. But if anyone wants to go take a look at that play, you can probably go on Twitter or something and find it. Iowa State's playing Kansas State this past weekend. Receiver for Kansas State has the ball, is about to score, makes a great play, gets to the 1 yard line, is kind of turning sideways, more parallel with the goal line, and is unaware of the defender right behind him, and he gets it punched out from behind him, and Iowa State recovers in the end zone as a touchback. That is a situational awareness type play. That is the type of fumbles that this group is incurring. It's not effort. It's not a desire. It is understand where and when you are at in the football game, who you're playing, how you match up, and you will be able to take care of it appropriately. So they got to do a much better job of that and make an emphasis of it, or it will affect them in a, terms of a loss at some point in the season. And that is a fact. So they're lucky it hasn't bit them too hard yet. It did against Arizona. But again, moving forward in Valley and even more so in the playoffs, you cannot play turnover-prone football or you will not reach the goals that you will ultimately want to achieve and still have in front of you.
It seems like I'm going off on individual tangents against internet commenters, but I caught from two different folks, again, the play calling thing.
Oh, guys, stop.
Come on now. 522 yards of offense. with, I think, eight different pass catchers and eight different rushers, multiple run schemes, multiple pass concepts, both play action and drop back, 522 yards of offense. The coaches are not fumbling the football, guys.
Yeah.
They could have and probably should have been in the low 50s. This offense is, what do they score? What do they actually end up scoring on Saturday? What was the final score? 31. So they're averaging 38. That 31 will bring their average down a bit, but not a ton. It's a 6-game set of data now. I mean, these guys are consistently in the mid 30s. This is, at what point when will people just give Tyler his flowers? I don't understand it.
Yeah. So I don't see the coaching stuff as much as you do, probably. And I promised you before this that I wouldn't yell. I might come close here.
I'm yelling. This is, I mean,
And here's Tyler's a friend of mine, so I get it. But I'm going to put this to bed right now. For anyone listening that thinks it's coaching, I'm going to put this to bed right this second. You, first of all, you already gave the yardage. How many? 522? Right? Total?
What's that? 522.
Okay. So, okay, that checks the box of not coaching being the issue. The fumbles. Again, situational. The players got to know that. The coaches are putting them in positions to succeed. Dom Ganello was about to score, and he fumbled the football. That's not coaching. When you go and look at the score disparity that I mentioned earlier, so the last four games, so you're removing A&T and Drake from this equation. In the first half, NDSU is outscoring opponents 55-50. We would like to see that widen more, but nonetheless, they're still up at half. The second half, 65-38, NDSU is outscoring their opponents. You want to know what I attribute that to? Good coaching. Okay? Furthermore, the way they spread the ball around to multiple players and the way that you can have other guys step into spots that aren't getting as many reps in practice and can still produce, that's good coaching. So these things that are incurring to me, and this is a direct challenge to the guys in the locker room. I think it's the guys in the locker room not being ready to play, and there's no better example than how they started this game at Indiana State, the BYOE. The leaders in that locker room need to be responsible for that. And I'll be very open about it. I hope people are mad at me over that. I don't care. Because it is the guys in the locker room that need to hold each other accountable and to that standard that is expected. I know they already expected of themselves. I'm not trying to be too hard on them. They are capable of things that they have not quite reached yet consistently. And I know I've mentioned that, but that to me is the guys in the locker room. It's not the coaches. So I don't know. I'm so glad I haven't seen that on the internet because I would have been seething if I would have seen multiple instances of that. But anyway, I digress. I'm off my soapbox.
It's crazy. And I didn't have to even look at, but when did Tyler take over as offensive coordinator? When Chris left, right? Had to be. Let's all just agree that the 2020 season didn't happen, the spring season. That's for a number of reasons. I would say that you weren't expecting to not have Trey. I tell you what, when we go back and look at this FCS run years from now, the team that the 2020 team could have been.
Let's not talk about that. Anyway,
it's a whole thing. It's a whole thing.
Yeah, you're right, though. You're right.
Anyway, I'm going down the wrong road here. Their offense in 2018, 2019, 2021, and this year is like top five in the FCS. Mm-hmm. And it's ball control. It's a ball control offense. They care way more about holding it for 40 minutes than they do about scoring.
Yeah.
Seriously. And they are – anyway, I can't even, I try to always just treat people with respect and like sort of, give them a little bit of a benefit of a doubt when having a football conversation. Maybe they obviously, I mean, most nine out of 10 people are not watching as much Bison football as I am, are not asking the questions that I'm asking of former players, of coaches, et cetera. And this is not a big pump me up type thing. Like I, whatever. I'm just a guy who loves football and pays a lot of attention to it. I am pretty much just out on whatever conversation we're having. If you tell me Tyler Roehl sucks, like I it's a pretty quick, I can't do this with you, buddy. Trigger for me at this.
That's not worth my time.
Anyway. Cam was electric, as we mentioned, 92.6% adjusted completion percentage. I'm going to have a little nerd, and this is not so. Stoffel dropped one, Rajah dropped the one in the corner, Lipke dropped like a little 6-yard hitch to pick up a first down when they split him out wide, and DJ dropped one over the middle. I'm not picking on these guys. I'm gonna do a little nerd thing, and not even estimating yak, just air yards. I'm gonna look at what Cam's line would have looked at if they would have caught those passes and just immediately fallen down. Screw yak. I'm just talking about air yards. What his 25 of 27 line would have looked like if everybody, and I get it, man. Like he sailed one over Mathis's head high and wide. He makes mistakes as well. All quarterbacks do. But to be graded as a drop, we've seen with PFF, they're pretty forgiving. You have to have a pretty catchable ball for them to actually ding you for a drop. And so I'm going to be interested to see like what his line would have looked like just air yards had the guys held on to the football. And I do expect there to be one or two drops a game. That's football. You don't catch every single one. But anyway, I thought Cam was really, really impressive. Folks, if you are doing business with an insurance company where you show up and you park your car in their parking lot and the product that they sell is right there over the door and it's the one and only product they sell, maybe they've got a Super Bowl commercial, maybe you're just, you know, listening to the radio and you hear that company's commercial, you're taking a gamble. And that gamble is that person across from you at that desk has exactly what your business needs or exactly what you need as a family. And if he doesn't, you have to go, he or she doesn't, you have to go to 5, 6, 7, 8 different people that sell single individual products like that person does and try and find the best rate and the best coverage and the best fit for your family. Don't do that. Don't do that. Go see my guy, Quinn Allo at Tundra Insurance on the main drag in Horace. Quinn's doing business with over 20 different carriers right now on the commercial side, on the health and life side, certainly on the property and casualty side, your home, your cars, your toys, whatever. Let him do the hard work. Let him find the best rate for you and your family or your business. Let him do all that. Get in touch with him, tundrainsurance.com. We've got the Facebook page rocking and rolling, or give us a call at 701-969-1661. That is Tundra Insurance. I was really impressed with 26. K's to me, I love him. I've mentioned on a number of occasions, I think he should be a sub linebacker. I think he should be a nickel linebacker. I think asking him at 206, 207 pounds to stand in there and play Will 58, 63, 71 snaps a game is a lot. But this game, he told me to take that idea and stick it squarely where the sun does not shine. Amazing game from him. 4 QB pressures, including 2 sacks, a hit, and another knockdown, and only 1 missed tackle on, I think, like 11 different attempts. His missed tackle percentage was like 11. He was awesome after really kind of looking – undersized against Youngstown, I thought, and falling off of 4 or 5 different tackles. He brought the absolute wood against Indiana State. And man, I think this defense, when it's running really well, and we'll talk about it in a little bit, but man, like in Talladega Nights, when the little kid tells the grandpa he's going to come at him like a spider monkey, their twists and pressures with these, you want to call them undersized linebackers, they look like spider monkeys, man. They're coming at you from all sorts of different directions, and K's might be the best downhill spider monkey they have. I mean, they, like I said, they might not be 235, they might not be 240, but they have to be hard to pick up for a 300-pound offensive lineman, and knifing in there the way that they do and the way that Kays did on Saturday. I was really, really impressed. Now, some of those twists, some of those games, they get you to give up an 83-yard rushing touchdown that would have been a rushing touchdown in flag football. But
yeah,
I think you might have to live and die this year.
Yeah, when you have guys that are a little bit undersized, you're going to have to utilize your assets, which are speed. Anytime you give up size, typically the other side of that coin is you have more speed. So you need to play to those strengths, and the twists and shifts are going to be a part of that. And when you get guys running downhill and running fast, you're going to see some really cool things, some really athletic plays. But on the flip side of that, they're going to guess right every once in a while. And they did. Good for them. And but by and large, I thought James Kayser played a really, really good game. He's turning into a workhorse for this defense. And I really just credit Coach Braun and his defensive staff for allowing him to thrive in this type of game, because that's what we need to see moving forward from him. He's going to have to step up big this week. So in order for him to have the same production against SDSU, I think he needs to be put in even more positions to succeed, because he's going to need to come downhill against a swath of big running backs.
Yeah.
So.
No, it's a big week. It's a big week. Hoping they give Wisniewski back. I don't have any info on that. Common sense would tell you they keep him out because they have a bye week after this one. Buy him 14 days instead of 7. You know, as much as folks, and this is something obviously we'll talk about later, but as much as folks, you know, want that marker back and want to finally be able to say something back to those rabbits after, you know, it's been since Adam Cofield up the right side on College Game Day since they've touched that thing. It's a little bit too long, but what matters is the podium in Frisco in January. And I'm not saying if you play Cole in this game, he gets hurt, you lose him for the season, all that's automatic, but like the goal is the goal. And So, you know, don't rush. You definitely see maybe two different approaches to that goal with, it looks like, old Tucker Kraft at SDSU being shoved back into the lineup when the green and gold are on the schedule. But Trevor's getting – I wish you guys could see the video, because –
I think you came into this with the goal. You did actually – I know. You came into this today with the goal of getting me fired up, because you know what this week means to me, as does everybody else who listens to this. Like, it – let's just move on. Well, we got time for that for the preview
pod. Jack's preview is later on in the week. Marquis Siegel, and not just because he was the highest graded player by PFF on the defensive side, he's so fast. Worked out with our guy Duds while he was in high school playing in the Omaha area. Comes highly recommended by Christian Dudzik. Obviously a younger corner, but to me, I think what I've got the corner group pegged as right now is maybe like two series on for Destin and Courtney, and then one series for Jaden and Marquise. I just wonder if there isn't more of an opportunity to have them just not always work in tandems, or maybe matchup wise a little bit. Because one thing about Siegel, man, he does not get beat deep, and they completed some stuff down the field. They got Courtney to grab one time and got the 15 for the DPI. And I'm not saying, you know, Courtney's not a good player, because I think he really is. But if you've got a real burner, I think Siegel has to be a bigger part of the game plan. Like he just wasn't having it. And I know he's younger than those other guys, and you know he has less experience than those other guys, but these reps are important for him, and he's been really impressive.
If he's I agree. We got a young guy like that who's answering the bell every situation he's been in. I think it warrants more snaps. Into what capacity, I'm not sure. I do like the idea of giving them more opportunities that help them matchup-wise in their skill set versus the tandems. Maybe that's why I didn't play on the defensive side of the ball, but that's just my two cents. Now, with him just being a sophomore, and I believe his pass breakup, was that against Hendricks too?
Oh, let me hear some great radio. I'll look real quick. It's on, it's the last, I think it might even be the last video that I had a chance to see. or had I had a chance to clip out before I hopped in the car and headed to Fargo. Let's see. You see, it's not. No, and I can tell right away because the kid's got two numbers. Okay. Hendricks wore 8, so this kid has 89 or 88 on.
Okay. For some reason, I thought it was against Hendricks. So that's just me.
Are you talking about the vertical one or the one he broke up in the red zone?
The one he broke up in the red zone. I think it was a slant.
Yeah, it was a slant. It was 88 or 89. It wasn't Hendricks. Hendricks was running an inside slant, and Wadarczyk kind of – or no, Kubits. Shout Kubits. As opposed to the touchdown they gave up where he was Tampa dropping into nowhere. But that is another discussion for another day. They did. I think they might have even run the exact same concept, and they just – NDSU played it better the second time around. But that's, another conversation for another day. Where were you going with this now that I'm off?
I was just thinking if his pass breakup was against, 8, he's putting quality tape against a quality player. And that's what I was stressing in the pre-pod was that you've got to do that against a receiver like that. This defense needed that. And I was thinking his pass breakup was against him. So
shout out to Bronny, man. They put him in the number 2. They put Hendricks in the number 2, and the number 1 runs a little rub, like a little fade from the – they're never going to get the ball, but he's trying to pick the defender. And that worked the first time because they had the hook curl defender kind of in crisis with Kubits Tampa dropping. So there's this giant ocean to throw the touchdown into. The second time they run this play, and people can't see this is terrible radio, but they basically man up Hendricks with Kubits and – Kazer jumps the route. If they try and throw that inside slant for a touchdown to Hendricks again, Kazer's probably in the other end zone. So shout to Bronny.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. That's again putting your players in position to succeed. Going back to the last point.
If you're listening to the pod, rewind 2 minutes and pull that clip up on Bison Report Twitter feed. Then what we're breaking down for you will make a lot more sense.
We got a lot of side tangents in this pod, but where I was going with Siegel is I think you got a young cat like that getting in positions to play well and he's rising to him. Give him more snaps, So what that looks like, I don't really know. If Dudzik's high on him, I know that's a good thing because I know Dudzik.
I tell you what, man, this podcast outside of the quite inaccurate score predictions. We came out smelling like a rose a little bit. The two guys that we identified on this on Indiana State team by name, Dante Hendricks, confirmed. Let me one of these.
Dog, he scored 5 touchdowns against Southside.
That kid was something else. And then Rylan Cole.
On a bum ankle.
Yeah, on a bum ankle. And speaking on a bum ankle, with a Kabir Baja Biamila cast on his arm, Rylan Cole with 19 tackles, conference defensive player of the week with one hand. So shout to Rylan Cole as well.
Dog, he scored 5 touchdowns against Southside.
Credit to those guys.
The KBK reference. Excellent.
The KGB. Good job. Absolutely. I remember that season when he had that cast. He just bashed people upside the head. I don't know as though they'd let you do that anymore. But no bigger one of these.
Dog, he scored 5 touchdowns against Southside.
Then Zach Mathis. Man, what a game from Zero. And in huge spots, too. Just everything that kid has been through and the guys that he's watched play, not necessarily that he's jealous, but like the guys that he's watched succeed in front of him, knowing how much talent he had and knowing the type of player he could be. I just it's hard not to get goosebumps even talking about what this season has been for Zach Mathis.
For me, obviously being a receiver and in that room, I'm just super proud of that kid. He has battled a lot injury-wise, has not had a whole lot of opportunities, and his last crack at it, he's making the most of it. And it's fun to watch. It is super cool to see his confidence rise every single game and him just command the football. And the way he already had a plan in place to shake the defender at the goal line to extend the lead in the fourth quarter was a smart football play. It was a veteran move. And it just says a lot about this kid's approach and focus for this team. So the more opportunities he can get, the better. And I do think he is the one leading that room right now in terms of propelling that pass game forward. And I'm just super proud of the kid. Super, super proud.
Love that. Again, I'll certainly hand up, admit that they were running a game. They were running a little twist, an exotic type pressure on the 81-yard touchdown to Dinka. But I just, man, the early success, some spots late in the game, even not even some sacks, but like some incompletions where the guy's open, but the quarterback just can't make an accurate throw because he's getting drilled or he's escaping or he's not playing from a real platform. His feet are moving. I just think that this defense with the injuries that they've suffered up front and the youth that was already there, but you lose your, you know, one of your top rotational defensive ends in Kava, you lose your best defensive lineman, period, and maybe best defensive player, just the arc that his career was going on in Eli Mostart. You're just and you don't get Wisniewski back yet. You haven't got, you know, probably your most talented second-level player back yet. I don't know that they are just ready to go play base defense. Rush with four, cover with seven, fit the run, do all the things that you need to do, which I think is obviously the best version of Bison defense. We saw that with your group, certainly with the way that Kyle and Cole were able to get pressure and LP and those guys, and then allowing, you know, the back seven to do their work, whether it was the base personnel guys or bringing in Shep in as the fifth DB. Of course, rush four and drop seven was great for that crew. This just isn't that crew. They don't have Ryan Drevlo up front right now. They don't. And that's not, yeah. I mean, that was a grown man. That was a 22, 23 year old grown man from nowhere, North Dakota, baby. Like that's that kid's just not, he's there. His name's Jackson Dutneffer, but he's 19. He's not 22. And that's anyway, I just think the more attacking style of defense, it might cost you a touchdown. It might cost you a chunk play. I get that, but I think the best plays that I have seen from this group have been coming downhill, and I will not hear anything else of it, to be frank, Trev.
Well, they're just, I mean, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier in the pod, smaller bodies, put them in positions to succeed, let them play fast, and you're going to make mistakes, you're going to miss, you're going to have some 82-yarders like you did on Saturday, and if that's the case, we've got to outscore them. And this offense is more than capable of doing that. But you can also hit home runs defensively by doing that with pick sixes. Now, there's been a few instances this season where they've had them, they've dropped them. So they do need to capitalize when that does come up. So play fast and just don't hang your hat on instances where they get theirs, because they're going to guess right. When you play fast, you're going to give things up. And when you take shots like that, you're going to give things up, rather. So I'm in full agreement. Just put these guys in positions to succeed for the type of personnel that you have. A little bit smaller bodies. It's who it is. There's not a ton of depth because of injuries. It is what it is. So, I mean, in a game like South Dakota State coming up, they're going to have to play fast anyway. So hopefully we see more of that.
For sure. And frankly, they're going to have to out coach South Dakota State to win this game. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying there's a huge talent differential, but if they get out coached, they're not winning.
Yeah.
They're just not. They're just not. Yeah. So that's where I'm at with that. It is Jack's week. Trev, what's being worked on in practice this week based on what you've seen over the last couple of weeks and certainly on Saturday?
Based off what's been kind of the theme with this team and who you have as an opponent this week, hang on to the football, limit the penalties, and just play fast. I think those are the three things that you can control for the most part. So you've got to be able to do that in order to give yourself a shot to win against a team that matches up very well against you and is very, very talented and wants nothing more than to just beat you right now for the marker, because that's their Super Bowl. But I digress. So those are the biggest things. Other than that, it's coming out fast. Those first three periods of practice, I hope their hair is on fire. I don't know if they still do practices Monday night, but those first three periods, you better come out ready to go, because that is what you're going to have to carry into Saturday, because that is not has what been the case for most of the season. And that starts this week with the Jacks. No better time to turn around than now.
All right. Thank you, Trev. Thank you to all you wonderful people listening this week. Thank you to Gateway Chevrolet and Tundra Insurance for bringing this wonderful podcast to our listeners. And thank you to those listeners for listening to the show. Have a phenomenal Jacks week, everybody, and go Bison.